government funding sources from entities like the National Institutes of Health and the National Science Foundation have been one of the keys to innovation. But there's also evidence that because of the hoops scientists and researchers have to jump through to get that funding, it's actually restraining innovation. So now Silicon Valley execs are opening up their own labs and investing their own dough to help accelerate breakthroughs in the life sciences. Derek Thompson calls this exciting news. Derek is a staff writer at The Atlantic, and he's been writing about this recently. He joins us now, as he does every Monday. Derek, good to have you, and thanks for this piece. Fascinating.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Well, just give us a sense of how conventional science funding works in the U.S. and what's wrong with it, how it might actually be restraining innovation.
It's a great and complicated question. So for the last 70 years, really since the end of World War II, we've really concentrated our scientific funding at the national level, at the NIH and the NSF. And it's obviously accomplished lots of wonderful things. There's been diseases that have been cured. There's been drugs that have been developed because of this research. But I think there's a couple problems with it. First, we force scientists to spend a lot of their time applying for grants, so-called R01 grants, for example, from the NIH, which takes up a lot of their time. So we basically spend 20 years creating scientific specialists that then when they actually become scientists can't specialize in science. They have to basically minor in grant writing as a part of their career. I don't think that makes a lot of sense. I don't think that's a very good use of time. So I would like us to find ways to, as some people in Silicon Valley and throughout the research community say, fund people rather than products. Give people more open-ended, no strings attached funding so that they can pursue their favorite ideas. One other problem with the way that we fund science at the national level sometimes is that because it takes all this effort to compete for scarce funds, people often present incremental ideas rather than radical ideas they think might be rejected by peer review. That doesn't seem very smart to me either. What we want is the free inquiry of free intellects. We want scientists to think of their best ideas and try to approach them with open-mindedness. And I don't think we're getting that necessarily all the time with the current funding system. So I think it's fantastic to see a bunch of little experiments that do overall seem to be trying to fund people rather than projects.
Well, let's talk about some of these examples from Silicon Valley. I mean, you write that research funding is now one of the hottest spaces in Silicon Valley. And I want to talk about sort of some specific examples. One of the ones you offer is something called the ARC Institute, and it funds, and you were just making reference to this a moment ago, it funds people rather than projects and offers no strings attached funding. So explain how that works.
Sure. Yeah. So the ARC Institute, one of the funders is Patrick Collison, the CEO and founder of the internet payments company Stripe. He, Patrick Sue, Silvana Connerman, they have started this institute, ARC, which I think is really exciting. They're essentially going to be paying about 10 to 15 scientists a good amount of money to fund eight-year terms. So they can research whatever they want over those 8 years. They're going to work on technology to improve their research. They're going to give them research teams. They're basically going to say, whatever your best idea is, we're going to fund it. I think that's a really fantastic approach. And ARC Institute specifically is going to focus on complex diseases, so-called polygenic diseases, that are diseases caused by the interaction of multiple genes rather than just one gene. These are really, really complicated. You're looking at stuff like cancers, looking at stuff like schizophrenia, really important diseases that we need to know more about. And if we do know more about them, we can begin to develop therapeutics to cure them or to help people live with them or live with mitigated symptoms. Really fascinating work that I hope they're going to be doing.
So there's another example which I was really intrigued by, and that is the problem that science is getting old fast. And you talk about the career path as being, it would be ludicrous, you say, if it were in business. that is, get a bachelor's degree, get a PhD, complete a postdoc or two, hope to join a university as an assistant professor, and then apply for funding from government agencies. So along comes new science, and this is an effort to sort of promote young scientists, right?
That's right. New Science is looking to promote young scientists. ARC Institute, I think, is also looking to do this. And Arcadia, another institute that I spoke to, is also looking to fund younger scientists. Look, the NIH, like I said, and the NSF, they do lots of wonderful work, but the average age of a recipient right now is in their young 40s. People in their 30s, people certainly in their late 20s, are hardly receiving any funding from the NIH at a national level. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me if you have a familiarity with the history of science. There's lots of scientists. Look at, say, Albert Einstein, who did some of their most promising, not just promising, most famous and groundbreaking work when they were in their mid-20s. Young people have a lot of groundbreaking ideas, in part because they, you know, aren't enmeshed in a system of older bureaucracy sometimes that causes people to think incrementally. We should want to fund young visionaries in science, just as we've seen that the funding of young visionaries in tech has often led to the growth of large and impressive companies. So I would really like to see, you know, more of these sort of science startups, I guess you could say, fund younger scientists rather than force them to go through a long process such that they can't really start on their most promising ideas until they're mid-40s.
Well, it's a fascinating set of ideas. I want to thank you for bringing them before us today. That's Derek Thompson, staff writer at The Atlantic, and we can provide a link to his piece at hereandnow.org. Derek, thanks so much.
Fantastic. Thank you.